Hey, I'm Antonio Graceffo, and this is the Brooklyn Monk in Asia podcast, number 12. The best interview for the worst job ever. It's one thing to fail at the interview, but it's something else when you pass the interview but don't have any intention of taking the job. Military door gunners on an attack helicopter often experience a euphoria, which comes from a feeling of being godlike, flying high above, pointing your massive and deadly weapons at the human ants below. You have the power to take life at your whim. I've been a military door gunner, albeit not in combat, but that feeling is nothing compared to the feeling of empowerment that you get from turning in your 2 weeks' notice at a job. You can do whatever you want at that point. You can come into work in your underwear, make up little nicknames for your boss like, "Hey, how's it going, smelly teeth?" And if anyone complains, you can always come back with, "What are you going to do about it? Fire me?" The power surge you get from 2 weeks' notice is nothing compared to going on an interview when you don't really want the job. It's the one time in the corporate world where you're free to speak your mind. With the 2 week notice high, there's always the danger that the reality of soon being unemployed will seep in and sober you up. But with the "I absolutely don't want this job" feeling, there is no impending negative consequence looming behind the door. The worst case scenario is that you won't get hired. And actually, that's a win because you don't want the job in the first place. Whenever I was feeling blue back in New York, I'd call in sick to work and then go out on an interview for some job I was grossly overqualified for just to make fun of the interviewer and to make myself feel better. "Oh, yes, Mr. Jones, yes, yes, yes. This sounds like a wonderful opportunity. But you know, as good a job as this seems, selling steak knives to my friends and relatives, I think I will stay with my current position as a financial manager. But I was wondering, when you turn up at a party, do people just run away, warning each other, 'That's that weirdo who tries to sell cutlery to everyone he meets. Don't let him get your email address or you'll be spammed for life.'" You have a lot more freedom in the interview if you've already decided that you don't want the job. The other day, I went on 2 interviews in Saigon. I actually desperately need a job, but I didn't need both of the jobs, which left me free to be as cavalier as I want to be with one of them. In the morning, I interviewed at a big language center which paid well and which had a full-time job to offer me, teaching general English to adults, but was willing to transfer me into teaching business diploma courses in a few months' time. The interviewer was polite and businesslike. He wasn't overly friendly, but that comes from interviewing foreign teachers in Saigon, where almost no one remains at a job for more than 7 months. As an employer, you don't want to invest too much in someone who won't be staying around. Most employers do a quick check when they first see you to make sure that you don't have a syringe hanging out of your arm. That would be immediate disqualification. They often have a clipboard with a checklist where you can earn points by not turning up drunk and for wearing pants. They also ask you to extend your arms so they can see if you have crudely broken shackles dangling from your wrists. Anytime I got caught with crudely broken shackles dangling from my wrists, I always used the excuse, "I'm sorry, I just escaped from Kevin Spacey's basement." But they don't always believe me. Good employers here don't put too much stock in your resume because that could all be lies. You generally have to produce letters of recommendation on a company letterhead from your previous employers. They also demand to see original copies of your diplomas, but even those could be fake. So they wait until they receive official authentication from the U.S. Embassy. They try to weed out fugitives by requiring you to present an FBI check. They make you teach a demo lesson to ensure that you actually speak English and can passably teach it. The real evaluation comes after you start working. And as a former manager myself, I will say, while you need the paper and the resume to get in the door, job performance is everything. The manager scheduled my demo lesson for the next week, and that was the end of the interview. That afternoon, I had a second interview at a college. The job sucked, and the interview was actually frightening. First off, the two guys who interviewed me were pasty, old, white British guys. Both of them were losing skin from their faces. It was flaking off at an alarming rate, and the older of the two guys had that sort of long and stringy grayish-yellow hair, like on a corpse that's been dug up after 6 or 8 months. I just wondered who would want to work with these two guys on a daily basis. They weren't just regular ugly. They were circus ugly. They sat me down on a couch, and one sat on either side of me, so I wasn't sure where to look. I definitely didn't want to look at the old guy any more than I had to. But the younger guy was no picnic either. He was quite obviously ill and kept hacking and coughing into a handkerchief. If he was that sick, I wondered why he came to work that day. The only reason I could come up with was it was a permanent condition. His attitude was, I've learned to live with it. Why can't you? The three of us were in a tiny room, and I was trying not to breathe, fearing that he was infecting me. One of his eyes was swollen shut, and I just had the feeling that this had nothing to do with this temporary illness. He kept turning his head at weird angles to look at me. It creeped me out, like visiting a Santa Claus with a colostomy bag. And your mother still wants you to sit on his lap to have a photo made, giving Santa a kiss on the cheek when you're like 17 years old. I decided I preferred looking at the old guy better. I didn't even bother to learn either of their names, so I just called the old guy Deathhead. The corpse man asked me if I'd received the interview questions they'd sent me by email. He had originally sent them as an attachment, but they weren't in a Word document. They were in some weird word processing software that no one has ever heard of, and which I'm sure the salesman told him, it's just as good as Word. And 15% of the time, people with normal computers were probably able to open it. But I had to ask him to resend the questions open, pasted in an email. Although I was a little embarrassed to have to ask him to do this before we'd even met, he was already on my bad list. I hate people who use anything other than Microsoft Word to write and share documents. It's like they're living in denial, perpetuating the myth that Word is just one of many ways to share a written document. Well, it's not. It's the only one. And if you want people to read what you've written, you'll use it. And did you read the questions, he asked me? Yes, I said. Now, normally when people send you interview questions in advance and ask you to look them over, they do this so that you'll be prepared and you won't be blindsided by their questioning. But instead, he actually expected me to have committed them to memory. Well, he said, followed by an unnatural pause, where he was expecting me to say something. I did, but I don't think it was what he was expecting. Well, what? I asked. Begin, he commanded simply. Begin? Answering the questions? Yes, of course. What else? It was so obvious to him that this was the normal way an interview was conducted that he couldn't even imagine how I didn't already know what to do. In my experience, interviews start with the questions like, tell us a little about yourself. Tell us about your teaching experience. There's so much they could have asked me, but the questions they sent on email didn't cover any of this. One of the first questions was, how do you feel about using Vietnamese language in the classroom? Now, I've written articles on this subject. I have tons of opinions. But wouldn't it make more sense to start out by asking me about my background first? Taking the lead, I started with, I have a BA from Tennessee State University, and a teaching qualification from blah, 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 and I taught at blah, 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 from blah, 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 until blah, blah, blah. They seemed a little disappointed. I hadn't touched on the questions. But if they liked the questions so much, they should have asked them. When I finished telling about myself, I expected Stringy Hair to start asking me some questions. I expected Stringy Hair to cross-examine me, you know, to start asking me some questions. Instead, he went on for about 20 minutes, telling me in great detail about a long list of interesting diploma courses that I thought he wanted me to teach. Sometimes, as a teacher, you take a job with less pay and sick or ugly coworkers because the level of teaching is better and you'll have more job satisfaction. The talking corpse was telling me about the school and the courses, but I was projecting ahead several months in my mind. Picture this. It's a Wednesday. The weekend seems ages away. It's the middle of the month. You can't motivate yourself by thinking about payday. It's raining, and you have to get on a motorcycle, drive across town in Saigon traffic, and face these two vultures. Deathhead kept making jokes. Sick Boy and I dutifully laughed at them. But would I be willing to laugh at them on that rainy Wednesday months from now? Or would I start coming to work later and later so I could run past them and lock myself safely in my classroom where I could pretend I was a good teacher with a great job? Is that a way I wanted to live? Can you call that living? Suddenly, back in the present, I realized the room was quiet. I felt three eyes staring at me as if waiting for a response. Assuming Deathhead had just made a joke, I giggled dutifully. What are you laughing at? He asked, a little taken aback. Oh, sorry, I was thinking of something else that didn't have to do with your appearance, I answered. Actually, I wish I'd said that. I wasn't going to take the job anyway, so the temptation to do things you've always wanted to do on a job interview was hard to resist. I was torn between doing something huge like telling them about the first time I ever cut off a human head, or doing something just a little creepy and weird that wouldn't get me thrown out of the room but would cost me the interview, like flossing my teeth right in front of them. I would take the dental floss out of my school bag, and while nodding and agreeing and not even breaking the flow of conversation, I would measure out about half a meter of the minty green floss. I would cut it and begin flossing. After each swipe between my teeth and across my gums, I would make loud noises, sucking off all the dead food. Maybe, just for a flourish, I'd do that hawking and spitting thing that you do when you have popcorn or cat hair caught in the back of your throat. Yes, yes, I totally agree with your stance on comprehensive testing, but I would like to... and then try to spit, like... but the cat hair was still stuck, so you had to hack more, like... Homework is also important. For something else I like to do in waiting rooms is I receive a fake phone call and pretend I'm a pimp. So many people believe that homework needs to be corrected, I would say to Deathhead. But it's not homework. Rather, the students that we should be correcting. And then, oh, excuse me, I have to take this call. Girl, you got a lot of nerve calling me when I'm all up in this interview like this. And then I would pause, listening, angrily. I don't care what you gotta say. I ain't seen you in 3 days. You owe me a lot of money. And then I'd pause, impatiently tapping on the table. Well, if you like him that much, you pay the freight. I don't care if it's true puppy dog love. Somebody gotta pay me for your time. And then, after a long pause, the coup de grace. Okay, Mom. Love you too. Bye. Sadly, I didn't do any of that. I forgot my own antics when Deathhead began telling me about the great job he was offering. First off, I wouldn't be teaching any of those interesting diploma courses. You had to be a certified teacher in Australia for those classes. Oddly, I am a certified paramedic in Australia. Or was until my license lapsed. But apparently, the Queen's Representative Office won't allow you to teach university-level business courses on a lapsed paramedic license. So, no help there. The interview was like the old bait and switch. They told me about the courses I wanted to teach just to lure me in. Then they said, haha, you can't have these courses. Instead, they told me about the crap courses they actually wanted me to teach. What they were offering me was teaching general English class for the employees of the university. That might have been an okay job. When I asked how many students and how long the course would be, Stinky Teeth hemmed and hawed and finally admitted, we don't know how many students it will be. You'll probably start the course with 5 or 8, and then they will slowly drop out over a period of weeks. I couldn't believe what this guy was telling me. What a stupid job. So rather than a full-time job with a one-year contract and guaranteed salary, which I'd been offered at the other school, instead I was being offered a job that might implode in a few weeks' time. Also, the only reason they called me was because in the British Commonwealth system, my teaching qualification is regarded as a master's degree. So they apparently wanted someone super qualified, very experienced, native speaker, who just happened to be hanging around Saigon unemployed and who was willing to work under such uncertain conditions. I looked over at the Cyclops as if to ask him, am I hearing this correctly? Apparently, when he lost his eye, he must have developed the power of telepathy to compensate. He obviously read my mind, because he just nodded his agreement with everything his boss had just said. I turned back to the lesser of two evils, and he continued on telling me about this great job, almost as good as that steak knives opportunity that I blew off in New York. We offer a one-year contract. If your course dwindles and ends before that time, obviously, you won't be required to come and teach an empty classroom. Now, last time, I thought he was telling a joke. I laughed politely, and I had hung myself. I wasn't going to get caught in that trap twice. There was a long, uncomfortable pause. Apparently, they were waiting for me to laugh. But I didn't feel much like laughing. For some reason, I was suddenly fighting a compulsion to ask how much extra his Vietnamese girlfriend charged him. I was picturing laundry day, when the bed sheets were covered with that stringy yellow hair. and dead skin, like a reptile when it molts. How much fabric softener did it take to wash the smell of death out of the sheets? That's why I never sleep with really old people. If it was me, I would burn the sheets and the bed and then salt the earth where they once stood. The next part of the job description was not intended as a joke, but it was the most laughable part of the whole interview. You'll be asked to sign a one-year contract. Actually, it's not a year contract. It's a contract based on completion of a course. And if you do not complete the course, the financial penalties are severe. Cyclops chimed in here. The penalty is forfeiture of your entire salary. Entire salary, I asked. You mean a month's salary? No, for the entire course, answered Cyclops gravely. Were they serious? This was the stupidest job ever. Let me get this straight, I was thinking. The job could end at any moment, and I'd be unemployed, with no recourse. But if I quit, I forfeit a year's salary. Again, Cyclops had those mental telepathy powers. It's to weed out the people who aren't planning to stay. Oh, that's why you did it, I said, wondering if he had any clue how retarded he was. If I were the employer, I wouldn't hire anyone who was willing to sign this contract. Maybe it was a test. Maybe if I stood up and said, "This is the most ridiculous job offer ever. I'm leaving." Maybe at that point they would have smiled and said, "We have found our man. We were looking for an honest, well-qualified teacher who wouldn't suck up. You're in, and at double the pay for all the better courses." But I didn't speak my mind, so I never got to find out if my fantasy would become a reality. Instead, I stood up and avoided shaking hands with Cyclops because of fear of contagion. I did wind up shaking hands with the corpse instead. While I was wiping the dead skin off my hands and onto my shirt, I asked, "So, I'll expect to hear from you next week then?" It was then that I realized the world of employment is very much like a random romantic encounter. You exchange numbers, and you both say, "Gee, that was great. I'll call you." But you know you're never going to call. And if they don't call you, you'd be just as happy. That's it for this installment of the Brooklyn Monk in Asia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll be notified every time I post a new episode. And if you liked it or hated it, please leave a comment. Just a couple of announcements. My DVD, Martial Arts Odyssey Volume 1, is available at lulu.com or at my website, www.speakingadventure.com. At the same address, you can send me an email, subscribe to my newsletter, or donate to the Keep Antonio Writing and Filming Fund. You can do that and more at my website, www.speakingadventure.com. I'm down and out in Vietnam, dead broke, and it keeps getting worse. Today I found out there was even one more delay in me getting paid. They tell you these things, and then what? I'm not supposed to binge eat? How is that supposed to work out? I wrote this story about my new job, knowing that I'll probably find it harder to write when I'm living on the street. So I wanted to get as much writing done as I could now. I feel like someone is hitting my corpse with a big stick. So, I'd be willing to carry heavy stones for half of what you pay an illegal immigrant, so call me. Also, if you're running any type of an illegal factory in a dangerous dark warehouse, I'm certain I can work as hard as a 12-year-old. So give me a job, please. You can buy a copy of my books, Warrior Odyssey or The Monk from Brooklyn, at Amazon.com or on my website, speakingadventure.com. Don't forget to donate to the Keep Antonio Writing and Filming Fund. Oh, you can watch Martial Arts Odyssey for free on my YouTube channel, Brooklyn Monk 1, or you can follow me on Twitter, Brooklyn Monk. Don't be what they want you to be. Be yourself. I'm Antonio Grisefo, the Brooklyn Monk in Asia, reminding you to go out and do something stupid today.